Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a long road getting from there to here. It's been a long time, but my time is finally near. And I will see my dream come alive at last. I will touch the sky. And they're not gonna hold me down no more. No, they're not gonna change my mind. 'Cause I've got faith of the heart.
That was Russell Watson and Faith of the Heart. And this is Until You Walk the Path, You Don't Know Where It Goes. I'm Teresa Chase. Happy Thursday, everybody. I've got a very special guest. We planned last week and the divine laughed. So we are, actually, she laughed a couple of times. But anyway, today, Patty Dobbs Gross is going to be talking about canine therapy and how it is very beneficial to children. Patty, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fabulous. It is a wonderful day in the neighborhood.
Yes.
And I'm not even wearing a sweater.
Yes, I love Fred Rogers. He was great to kids.
Your foundation, North Star Foundation,
uh-huh.
helps children with emotional and physical challenges.
Well, it's actually social and emotional challenges. Initially, the assistance dog field came to children with physical challenges via the adults that were served this way. So we're a natural outgrowth. We really started 20 years ago to try to serve children with social, emotional, educational concerns. And sometimes we also try to address safety concerns, but very carefully.
Right.
And merely as a safety net beneath other safety nets.
So you started working with the dogs because of your son?
Yes, my son Daniel was diagnosed with autism at the tender age of 2 years, 3 months. And about a month or two after that devastating diagnosis, I noticed Danny could read every word that he saw. And not only that, I noticed he was comprehending the mm-hmm. words he was reading. And I could tell him to go to his room if he had a meltdown, and he wouldn't go. But if I wrote it on a piece of paper, he would. So I just saw it was an effective channel, and a lot of sensory integration difficulties mm-hmm. are behind a lot of autism. And one of the things we did for Dan when he was young, besides proper education, appropriate environments, was to get him one of the first autism assistance dogs, really in the world. It came from mm-hmm. Canine Companions for Independence. And we received Madison when Danny was 7.
Okay.
And so really the experience of that placement was what gave me the courage to found North Star Foundation.
Now, North Star, you breed as well as train.
Yes. Well, you know, I would go light on the training, at least as far as I go. But even in terms of trying to understand this entire field, I think that people tend to think that it's more about the training of dogs than it is. This particular field is all about the proper breeding,
mm-hmm.
correct partnering, you know, a concept I think of as temperamental fit.
Right.
Soundness, of course, has to be there, and that's more complicated to get in a breeding line
mm-hmm.
than most might think, but show breeders know it's a very expensive proposition.
Right.
But to breed correctly for soundness is important. You don't want something to go physically wrong with
right.
a partnership that's starting to mean a lot. But I also believe canine behavioral genetics would say that temperament is largely forecast in the genes, although it's not nature or nurture, but an interplay of both. So we hit both by way of breeding as well as proper intelligent socialization. Mm-hmm. And see, I haven't even mentioned training yet. And
right.
Now I'm really, in my mind's eye, I'm up to about 6 months of age with pups that might have a default sit. Even that, I don't see that as training, because when pups are in the whelping box and I swoop in to say hello, which I do often, I only pet the pups that are sitting, and they figure this out soon enough. So that's a default sit when all the pups by 8 weeks of age will snap to a sit when I enter the room. I didn't train them for that. I socialized them for that.
Right.
And I think it's an important distinction, because if we think that just any old dog being trained for a certain amount of time will work well with a child with a social-emotional challenge, that's a bite waiting to happen. That's a misunderstanding, a misread
right.
of the field, as well as a misread of dogs. Because some dogs are temperamentally suited to working with a child who might push their buttons repeatedly. Most dogs are not.
Well, there are individually, apart from the breed, mm-hmm. the individual dogs have their personality, mm-hmm. and some are just more apt as healers and nanny dogs.
Absolutely true. Most quality breeders will recognize nature loves variety, and in just about every well-bred litter, you'll find a real talented pup. Now, mm-hmm. you know, when I say talented, that could have a different definition for a whole bunch of different people, and even in terms of working roles, like Hunter would have a different definition of a talented candidate for him. For me, a talented pup is the pup where, about 7 weeks of age, which is what I have a litter right now, that I put down a pan of food, and most pups will stay there. One pup will follow me back because they want me more than the food.
Mm-hmm.
That's my 1 out of 10. And that's a really talented puppy. When you start to breed for that particular quality, you start to get most of the pups hitting that general mark. But nature likes variety. You'll still have a pup that might be a little bit active, one a little too retiring.
Mm-hmm.
And so a wise breeder will know her litter. And this is the kind of intelligent breeding I think you need
right.
for partnering a dog with a child.
Well, that's the difference between a person who loves dogs, who breeds,
uh-huh.
and a person who breeds for money.
Oh, I think anyone who breeds for money is silly. Because
yeah.
they're not going to make it unless they're cutting dangerous corners, in which case they're lower than silly.
Yeah. So how do people get involved with your organization? How do you find the dogs? And how do you match them up with the people who come to you?
Well, I find the dogs through my breeding program largely right now. About 80 to 85% of the pups I place at this point in time, we've been incorporated for 16 years, very proud to say. And throughout the years, we have developed our own breeding program and kept track of our success. And it's clear that the pups that we breed here in-house and place in-house have the highest success rate.
Mm-hmm.
That's very clear. But it's also clear that there are children, maybe 1 out of 10 phone calls I get, children have allergies at issue at some place in their life. And so good luck and good fortune and perhaps fate would have it that I found a wonderful breeder of standard poodles in Wisconsin.
Okay.
And we've developed a pipeline. The poodles come from her and her children who socialize these pups carefully. And then they go to a North Star home in the Philadelphia area that just loves up the standards.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really it takes a village kind of concept here. They socialize the standards that need extra socialization, at least compared to my Goldens. It's
okay.
just in the nature of their breed. We need this. So they have a later timetable for placement, but we've got the resources due to a network of volunteers and quality breeder, Mary, that is just really valuable for the children that I serve. We placed about 12 of the standards in this pipeline of volunteers to very good result.
Okay. Could you tell me a little bit more how working with the dogs helps with the challenges?
Okay, well, you know, that's pretty unique because, you know, what they say, if you've met one child with autism, you've met one child with autism.
Mm-hmm.
So the same principle would apply here, that I could talk about the function of one a North Star dog, but it would really be for a generic child that doesn't really exist.
Right.
All our placements would be custom designed. However, there is a lot of overlap, one placement to another, even with children who, let's say, are grieving or suffering post-traumatic stress. They all have similar social emotional needs, and
mm-hmm.
we don't want to be splitting hairs at that level, because that's simple intuitive work. We don't want to make it more complicated than it is. I breed this wonderful puppy that's engaging and opens people's hearts. So they impact any environment the child we serve finds themselves in. And I believe appropriate environments for all our children, and specifically those on the spectrum that might not get them, is just crucial. They need to be incorporated into our fabric of our society. And pups are just like a secret agent in terms of doing that, that everybody, or most anyone I'd want to know, when the pup and the child is in a room, they let down their guard and they talk human speak rather than societal ways we've been taught.
Exactly. But your dogs also work with those in the grief process or
yeah.
who have had emotional traumas?
Yes, and in fact, the latest thing that we've decided to do at North Star that I could not do without appropriate volunteer support, which is just key, and also financial support. There was a young man who lost his life to a drunk driver. His mother, Lisa LaCoury, in remembrance, and Joe LaCoury, Lisa and Joe, started a scholarship fund in remembrance of their son, John LaCoury, and they gave money to North Star. We've established now a placement for the children in Hartford and the first responders in the Hartford area. We're forming a team where they will be available to first responders who are really amazing in the work they do and really need the support and,
mm-hmm.
and value the support that they're given. So there will be a North Star team in Hartford for children in crisis, as well as first responders, firefighters, people really with their boots on the ground,
yeah.
helping families and children in the Hartford area.
I heard there's also this one courtroom, and I can't remember where the article was from,
mm-hmm.
but in cases of children who have been sexually assaulted,
mm-hmm.
During their testimony, they will have a therapy dog right there front and center.
Yes, and you can see right there, you can think about it with two different minds. And one of our minds would be saying, well, this is great. This is a really important path to forge forward. But the other one, which is what I'm trying to say because I've been in the field so long, is to tap on the brakes and say, first, do no harm, like doctors. We cannot
right.
have a dog there that might misbehave in the courtroom and disrupt proceedings.
Right.
We cannot have a dog with a child with autism that delivers a bite instead of help.
Right.
We really need to move forward carefully. And that's why I think proper breeding, proper socialization, not cutting the corners, is important to this field, and why this work should be nonprofit based.
Correct.
If you're going for a profit, danger will ensue to a child.
Oh yeah, no. This wasn't any dog. This
uh-huh.
was a trained therapy dog that was there to basically act as a buffer.
Yeah, that's what I love about the field I'm in. I got my master's 2 years ago in educational psychology, and, you know, I'm 59, so when I was young and got my original master's in English, you know, they didn't have the option of educational psychology. They didn't marry those two fields yet. Now they have, and I think it's all social evolution. We see these wonderful new fields that the dogs can take, especially with the children, in terms of helping them psychologically. And there's so many children that need help around the world
yes.
now. We need to figure out as adults how we can deliver this in a kind of a triage way. Show this pup being delivered to Hartford Children. We want to be prepared to help children now and in the future. And I think that the dogs give us a way to be prepared for them.
Yes. They are healers, they're companions, they're protectors.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have this instinctive intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being as loyal as a dog is
uh-huh.
not just a catchphrase.
No, it's not. And I'd like to add, they're also sustainers. That's what I've been thinking about today because
mm-hmm.
of the pup we're donating to the Hartford Children. You know, parents, first responders, firefighters, people who police, people who hit the ground first with our children when they're in crisis. This is what we need to shore up as a society. Make sure this is where no child, indeed, should be left behind.
Exactly.
In a point of crisis. Yes.
You have written a couple of books. One is just going to be released. But The Golden Bridge, A Guide to Assistant Dogs for Children, is that based on, like, your family story?
Yeah, so thank you for asking that question, because that's what it is. It's really our story at the time. This was when Dan was graduating from UConn, which was, you know, a big enough accomplishment at the time, and North Star being founded as well. But then we went on in the preceding decade. Dan went out to USC and got his MFA in cinematic arts out there, which was an amazing accomplishment. And so I tell this story in my next book, Angels Aware. And what we're trying to do is further everyone's concept of where people with autism can go in our society. For Dan's really happy to lead the way. He's quite an adventurer. And also an update on our work with North Star. I learned a lot in the last 16 years. And, you know, like most of us, I learn more from my mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
And my successes, and that's really what I'm trying to include most in the book, is mistakes we've made and what we learned from them.
Well, one of the things that I found enlightening or informative
mm-hmm.
is that you and your son were dealing with the autism as you said, in the dark ages.
Right.
And before there was a lot of the information was unknown and untested. I've got two nieces with Asperger's.
Mm-hmm.
One has a therapy dog.
Right.
But as opposed to back then, how those who were challenged with autism or Asperger's has changed and grown. Like so many things, the more we've gotten to know about it,
mm-hmm.
We're still looking for the root cause of it.
Well, you know, now that there's not even any Asperger's anymore, they did away with that label.
Okay.
Now it's just all about the spectrum, which I think is a good move, actually.
Okay.
I think the Asperger's label was dividing people into camps, and then human nature took over, and you wanted your kid in a certain camp, a certain school, certain services by certain labels. I just think if we understand that autism is an umbrella
okay.
Concept, I think that more kids will then fit underneath it when we do this correctly. For instance, I think there's a whole lot of girls that need to be under the umbrella that present differently than their brothers on the spectrum.
Yes.
They present with more anxiety. They present with social naivete, but they still are not necessarily identified or given a label when young, and that's not necessarily a good thing, because when their differences do become more painful to them when they're older in middle school or high school, there wasn't that basis of early intervention that their brothers might have enjoyed.
Right.
That might have prepared them for the rough seas ahead. So I think there's a way as a society we can correct even misperceptions from decades ago, which is to break the mold of what it means to have autism, which may have a large genetic underpinning, and start to think about this genetic difference in a different way.
Well, I hate labels to begin with, because
uh-huh.
they serve to divide rather than give a clarification,
right.
because so many are negative, and I hate labels. We do need some, but I wish we wouldn't be so dependent on them.
Right. Well, the more we see, the more subtle aspects of what it means to be autistic in our society, and it might be different than another society, and it might be different than what happened a generation ago or two generations ago,
exactly,
where maybe they would have institutionalized my son Dan.
Right.
And that's only two generations ago, maybe three. They would have encouraged me to do that. So I think that we really have to understand that our values sometimes are not recognizable in what we decide to, in our decisions. So in making our decisions for our children on the spectrum, one of the first things you have to do is break the mold and start to be an independent thinker about the value of your child, knowing that appropriate environments is really a way to always keep mm-hmm. it simple.
My sister-in-law fought for her kids.
Uh-huh.
And she did a combination traditional school
uh-huh.
and homeschooling.
Yeah.
But she would not accept the status quo. And I am very proud of her for that, because she fought for her kids, and
yeah.
they both graduated. They took them a little longer, but they both graduated.
You know, and I'm Irish, and I sometimes get...
You're Irish, yeah?
I'm Irish. I'm very Irish. And I say this to say that in the beginning, I was pretty angry. But, you know, now I'm talking 15, 20 years ago. I was pretty angry. And I got something done with the power of my anger. But I got to say now, one of the things I'm trying to communicate, especially to people younger than myself, with kids younger, is that I really think at the end of this journey, we have to lay down the anger, we have to forgive, because our children aren't going to have the resources we have to be fighters.
Right.
And so if they don't want to inherit my fight.
Right.
Because I'm the street fighter that could maybe take it, and I'm talking in a verbal way.
Right.
Social skills way. You know, I can manipulate things much better than someone on the spectrum, and I'm married to a man on the spectrum. So I have to be careful, right? I could wield too much power. But it's I think it's one of the gifts that having a child on the spectrum gives you that you don't recognize right away or are not able to open right away, is understanding these things.
Well, one of the things that I have learned is that you're never given more than you can handle. And
yeah, but I got to tell you, I had some days I wasn't sure that was true.
I know.
It's always, I always tell people, that's my first question for God. Like, why the pain? And I'm really going to have to sit down. I'm going to sit down before I ask the question, because I really need to know.
Well,
not exactly sure. But,
yeah.
but I know one thing for sure. I'm old enough to know that pain's always part of the experience. And now I'm trying to differentiate the concept for the kids I work with between good pain and bad pain.
Mm-hmm.
Because there does seem to be some requisite pain to growth, at
well,
least in our society.
It's called growing pains.
Yeah.
And now the half hour flew by, so we have to do your shameless self-promotion.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, here's, I guess, where I say that from the beginning of my work, which happened 20 years ago, really, because I was breeding specifically for kids like my own son, it was really cool, a grassroots effort. People started coming to my door
mm-hmm.
and asking if I would get them a pup for their child. And I started giving away the pups I was breeding, and my husband said, well, you know, I don't mind this. We're putting a lot of money into what we're doing. Why don't you at least incorporate yourself so we don't lose money? I don't need to make money. And so I got that. And so that's how North Star really started. And I watched my husband crunched over the kitchen table trying to make all the numbers match, because from the beginning I found if I asked true cost for the incredibly expensive placements we're creating, that the families I want most to serve could not afford us.
Right.
That was not okay with us. So from the start, we have stayed at asking our families to fundraise half of true cost. So in order to do that, I need to fundraise, it's my job personally, to
right.
fundraise half a true cost of every placement I create. And we create about 15 a year on average. So it's a personal favor to me, as well as a personal show of faith that people understand what we're doing and get what they're supporting to support our work. You can do so in two ways. One is through our website, www.northstardogs.com, And you can donate with a credit card there. There's also, you can send a check made out to North Star Foundation, three words, to my attention, to my address, 20 Deerfield Lane, Stores, S as in Sam, T as in Tom, O, R as in Rose, S as in Sam, that's Stores, Connecticut, where the university is, 06268. And either way, your donation is considered tax deductible, and it helps me to help another child, because once I'm done doing my fundraising part, I can turn to a child on our waiting list that right now is about a year, and I don't want to make it any longer. The kids I serve, just I don't want to have to make them wait longer than a year. You can learn more about us on my Facebook page, and you can also befriend me at Patty Dobbs Gross.
But also your books. Your portion of the royalties goes to support your foundation.
Yes, they
do. So buying your books actually supports your foundation, as well as giving you the information about therapy dogs.
That's correct. And my next book, the same structure, will apply. My life is just a very grassroots nonprofit. We're all in this together, and that's the only way my family survives, so I'm just all about that.
Okay.
And in along the way of doing it, I found that a lot of people sort of like the concept of being all about that in communities. And, you know, a lot of things are going on that make friendly communities, especially for vulnerable children and older people, very important for us to sustain into the future.
Yes. Patty, thank you for helping the children and actually helping the dogs.
Yeah, well, thank you for inviting me and to help share. Our mission to educate is a huge part of what we're doing, so I really appreciate that.
And I'm going to, I really thought about how we were going to sing this out because I wanted, you know, it's easy to play on the heavy keys, so I decided to go light.
Okay.
And play a monkey song called Gonna Buy Me a Dog.
Oh,
and Patty,
I
will be calling you after the show because I always do.
Good.
So here is the monkeys gonna buy me a dog.
Okay, thank you.
Where's the verse? She used to bring me my newspaper.
You don't even know where it's at.
She knew where it was at. She used to keep me so contented. But I can teach a dog to do that. I'm gonna buy me a dog.
You can teach dogs to do that. You can only train elephants.
Cause I need a friend now.
I need a friend now.
Now.
Yeah.
I'm gonna buy me a dog.
A dog here over by those spots.
My girl, no lum, no how.
1, 2, 3, 4.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Hike!
Hike! I was late on that one. I just got back from Africa, you know. I was playing cards with a native.
Oh, Zulu?
No, I usually won.
I wish I had a glass of water.
Why, you thirsty?
No, I want to see if my neck leaks. I buy a raccoon, but John already has one.
35
bucks. I'm gonna buy me a dog.
Dog.
Dog. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I need a friend now.
Yeah, yeah.
Boop, boop, shabop, bop, ram-a-lam. I'm gonna buy me a dog. What, my girl don't let me know how. How?
Now,
brown cow. I think I'm going to buy me a dog, yes, sir. I'm going to buy me a dog. If I was looking for a word to describe what I'm going to buy, I think dog would be the word. It would be dog. That would come springing from my lips. Dog.
to be springing from my...
Can you turn it off, please? Can somebody open the door and let us out? They're coming to take us away.